Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sequester Exit Interview for Episode 5. I am now joined by my previous co-host on Season 3, Brent. How are you doing, Brent?
And future co-host as well, I hope. I hope I did you proud on this season of Sequester.
I think once you lose Sequester, I don't know if you you have to win your way back to co-host privileges.
I might have to win a battle back. That's what I probably need to do. I'm doing great. I had a fabulous time. I wasn't lying on Twitter when I said that it was the time of my life. I we talked about this initially. I went on the show because in part I wanted to hype Sequester, and I thought, you told me, you can do a lot of good on the outside, but you can do a lot more good on the inside, getting people hyped up about it. And I was like, you're right. And so I took the plunge, but there was also a part of me that was like, I really want to do this. Like, I've been talking about this for so long. This is my chance to play a reality show and like give the confessionals and have the sassy comments and get into fights. And I don't intend to get onto fights, but it just sort of happens around me. This was my chance to do everything. And I played the game the way I wanted to play. I think a lot of people don't understand that I played to win. That was me playing to win. I was not playing for good TV. I was not trying to make a show of anything. Like, I played to win, but I wanted to play my way. And my way was out in front, like, no holds barred, aggro as fuck, a chaos-based, fear-based contestant who would do anything to survive and anything to win. That's what I wanted to do. And I felt like I accomplished that. Like, that's the boy that I saw playing the season. And to make it past the buyback to the halfway point of the season was really gratifying to me. Like, I didn't get voted out or dragged for the first 5 eliminations. There's usually 9 to 10 episodes in a season. So this is episode 5. And I thought I succeeded in getting hype for the show, but I also got hype for myself. Like, I was really excited about my performance. I had highs and lows. I think surviving episode 3 was like a miracle in and of itself, with some help from Spencer. And going out the way I did was a little bit of a bummer, because it was apparent that everybody in the game, for the most part, besides Muna and Jacob, I think wanted me to stay and Spencer to go. I heard some people, Shireen, other people say I'm terrible at Sequester and I don't have good relationships with people, but obviously that's not true, because there were a lot of people that were like, I don't want Brent to go. I don't want Brent to go. And I'm like, yeah, because I had good relations with people when it counted. I just didn't have good relations with everybody. That's tough for me to do.
Could you say that, thinking about it, you're the real winner of the season?
Oh, yeah. I already said that on Twitter. Yeah. I know.
You've learned a lot about yourself. You've proven that you can do it. And
yeah. Oh, for real. I mean, I really was. And I've told this to a few other people who have lost the game. Like, Katie obviously lost the game. I said, girl, you fucking won. You went out there and owned the first 2 episodes. You showed everybody you're a total fireball. You're not going to stand in the shadows. You're going to be, she's a fucking star, Taryn. Okay. So there are multiple people who won the season. And I felt like I do feel like some people are very self-congratulatory. And I know something about being self-congratulatory. When, I was listening to people like on Survivor, Big Brother say I was the real winner of the season. But on a show like this that says, raw and unfiltered and as homegrown as Sequester is, it's made by fans for fans. I feel like those of us who went out there and showed what we can do, like we truly did win. And I felt that way.
Do you feel like before we get into like the details of the game and all that,
do you feel like
you are somebody that is used to being on the outside, used to criticizing, used to commentating, and you're kind of known for your criticism in particular. Do you feel like you got a new perspective on the other side of things, what it's like to be on the other end of that?
Yeah, totally. So a couple things. I think one of the things that another reason why I came onto Sequester was I wanted to see what it was literally like. Like, we podcasted about Sequester last season, but neither one of us knew how the rounds go or what it's like in the game and how fast it moves. I have a total appreciation for that. But more than anything, I see being on the other side of it, how people who are podcasting on shows don't know everything. And I, like, oftentimes I'd be like, you know, like, girl, I know what happens, but now having lived it, I'm like, I was listening to people podcast with you and even you sometimes. And I'm like, that's not right. Like, that's not what happened. That's not the way it went down. Like, didn't you see what happened? Like, come on. You saw it. It was right over there. Guys, come on. But people would get it wrong sometimes, or they would say things that are totally diametrically opposed to what I saw on screen and what I thought good strategy would be like. Like, Wiggler was on here a week ago or 2 weeks ago saying that, like, he didn't understand why Spencer didn't take Shireen's deal. And I'm like, I can't believe he's saying that. Spencer never should have taken Shireen's deal. Shireen just didn't vote for Spencer that round because she couldn't. The twist negated her ability to vote for him. She couldn't vote for Spencer because if she voted for Spencer, she would have been voting off Billy instead with him. So that's why she was like, oh, well, this round I won't vote for you, because she already knew the real details of the twist, and she knew that she wasn't going to be able to. It wasn't like she just benevolently came out of nowhere to say, you know what, Spencer, this round, let's do something different. No, girl. The tea was she couldn't vote for Spencer, and I guarantee you, if he hadn't picked her for that battle match, she'd have gone right back to targeting him when he came back in the next time.
What does this mean for future commentary? Are you going to be more understanding towards the players?
I think I can be. Yeah, I do think there's a part of me that sees that I don't know everything, and there's a lot of interpersonal play that isn't necessarily obvious on screen all the time. I think the things that I was frustrated about were, like, you know, my relationship with Spencer wasn't shown as much as I would have liked it to have been. But it wasn't really pertinent to the story at hand, and I understood why it wasn't, but that was frustrating as a player. And I think I have more empathy for people, you know, podcasting about future seasons of Sequester, future seasons of Big Brother, from a standpoint of just, I don't want to say I'm going to be easy on people, because I'm never going to be easy on people, because I don't expect people to be easy on me. Like, I expected people to call me out for my shitty moves, my shitty play, my bad social game, and, you know, the times that I make mistakes, and give me a little credit when I do something right. Like, that's all totally well and good to me. But having a perspective of the human element of it, yeah, sure, I get that. And I do think that I've softened a little bit on that. I've softened with you over the years. Like, we used to fight all the time, and now I feel like we never do, because we get each other. You know, you learn, you grow, you mature. That's how life is.
Mature, yes.
Not a word I associate with me a lot.
Do a lot of people say mature instead of mature?
I said mature for the first, like, probably 35 years of my life, but then my ex would say mature, and so I thought it sounded like haughtier, and so I was like, oh, is that how the rich people say it? Okay, I'll say it like mature. Like, I thought mature sounded like my mom when she says the washer and dryer instead of the washer and dryer.
The washer, like the old cut person would say mature.
Yeah, a lot of people, thank you for reminding me. That's another thing. I had a question about, like, what did he mean when he's like, I'm the oldest cut? What does that mean? That's a drag queen reference. Drag queens often refer to themselves as cuts. Like, they'll say, like, you're like, I'm the oldest cut here. Because that it's like a pound of meat. So, you know, you refer to a meat, like, by its age or something. So, that's when I said I'm the oldest cut here. That's what I meant.
There you go. Yeah. All right. Well, so tell me, you like you said, you played very aggressively.
I did.
I think a lot of people expected you to come in, expected you to be loud, expected you to be abrasive. Do you think that just based on what you've seen, that people were surprised by your performance in any way?
I don't think anybody was surprised at all. I think that people might have expected that I would be a little bit low key. I would try to be under the radar. I would attempt to go under the radar for the first episode or so, but they were quickly disabused of that notion in the first, 15 minutes of the game. Like, I mean, I was there to be myself and to play the game the way I felt it should be played. I've always felt like Sequester is the game that rewards the aggressive people, the people that are out in front. I do not believe Sequester rewards people who play in the shadows, because ultimately it's going to come down to a final four and somebody's going to get dragged. And it's almost always the person who plays the least aggressive. You really have to be somebody who's out there and out in front if you want any chance of actually winning the game. And I was playing to win.
Yeah. Right away, it seemed like some people had problems with close talking.
Somebody in particular.
A big theme of the whole season, really. And a lot of people do it, but you seem to be the main culprit here of lots of close talking, lots of hand holding. Mm-hmm. We got some kisses and some slaps going on. What's going on here, Brent?
I mean, I'm myself, and I'm a very touchy-feely kind of guy. I think that's probably like one of my love languages is just, signs of affection. And I like to feel as though I am connecting with somebody. And Sequester is a game you see that huge house, but we're restricted to two floors. And sometimes we just had the one floor. I remember rounds where they were like, you can't go upstairs today. And we're like, okay. So you have to communicate with people in a house that is hardwood floors, echoes. So I'm sorry, I don't just want to yell across the room at somebody so everybody can hear my plan. I'm probably going to get pretty close to you to talk to you about it. Now, as far as like holding hands and whatnot, like, I don't know, that's just something I do. I never realized I did that until now. Like, I really didn't, because the funny part, when I went to jury with the other four people who were there, the first time I was there, I did this. I went like, I didn't try to do it on camera. I grabbed the shoulders. I'm like, who am I? And they're like, oh, that's Brendan. Cause Brendan always like grabs your shoulders and then talks to you. And then I did holding the hands thing. And they were like, oh, that's you, Brent. Like, I mean, it's just something that I didn't realize was a part of my being until I actually watched myself back on tape. But even in the game, I was aware that like, for some reason I do that with people and I don't know why I do. It's just something I do. I don't know. I can't explain it. It's just me. Yeah, so, but hey, can we talk really quickly? Because the only person who ever had a problem with me close talking was Rachel. Rachel and I, we just don't vibe. We don't vibe. I remember listening to her exit interview and you were like, did you hide your disdain for Brent really well? Like, he was not aware of the fact that you were not feeling him. And she's like, no, it's just, that says a lot about his self-perception, is that he can't, see in front of his own face. And all I can say to that is I'm just less good at being fake than Rachel. I think she's better at that than me. So, it's just like, we don't vibe very well. And I choose to believe people and, whatever they say they are, I are. You heard me, Taryn. You called it on the podcast that I'm a little too trusting sometimes. And when people say, hey, I'm on your side, Brent, I'm like, oh, okay, they're on my side. But sometimes they're not on my side. And I can be caught with my pants down sometimes because I just believe people.
Yeah. I think that seemed to be one of the, I don't know if it was necessarily so harmful. Like, I think you definitely were believing that people were on your side when they weren't. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure what it would have done for you to not believe it.
Yeah, I'm not, is that going to help me in the game somehow? Like, right. I feel like it's okay. Like, I actually feel like it's better for people to believe that I believe that they're on my side, because then they're not worried about me. You saw even with Rachel, she said that I'm going to vote for Spencer because even though I can't stand Brent, I don't believe that he's coming after me right now. He's not offended by me right now. He's not mad at me right now. So I'm going to vote for Spencer. So as long as people believe that I have their best interest, that's actually good for me. We talked about this on Big Brother. It's not about trusting people. It's about whether people think that they have your trust that actually matters. So the fact that I was naive in some situations actually worked to my advantage.
Yeah. I mean, you're exactly the kind of person I talk about when I talk about, like, I would rather them live in ignorance than know the truth and not be able to hide it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
And I don't think you were great at hiding it all the time.
I'm not good at hiding it. So that's another thing. Like, I felt like I would be a better liar in the game, and I'm just not. I'm not a good liar. I try to be a ratty kind of player sometimes. I try. I really do, but I'm not good at it. I don't enjoy it either. I'd rather just tell people to their face, like, I don't like you. So, you know, that's why the top blue in the episode 4 elimination with Billy, because I was just so over the loyalty card when I knew it wasn't true. And I knew she was up to something that round. I just couldn't put my finger on it. I knew something was wrong. I knew she didn't have Jacob's back. I felt like she had done something like throwing her vote. And sure enough, she had. So, you know, sometimes I can't control my temper. That's okay. That's how I live life. That's how I podcast. I can't control my temper sometimes. I see something, I get mad about it, and the top blows. That's how things go. It's like Wiggler said with the seltzer bottle. It's the shaken seltzer bottle. You know, like, it just, it blows sometimes, and you just got to stand back and let it blow. You know, if it hopefully it doesn't aim your way.
I have to imagine that you, I mean, you don't think it helped your game, right? Like, I think that, you know, if you had been able to maybe keep it under wraps, that maybe that would have been better. But I think another thing that I thought was interesting about your game is that, it didn't seem like anybody did really trust you. Like, sometimes they would be like, he's not coming for me. But every time you'd have a moment with somebody, we'd get a confessional soon after that's like, I don't trust this guy, though. Not mm-hmm. for a second. Don't believe yeah. for a second I trust this guy. He's going to snag me first chance he gets. It seemed like you had a big problem in making those like trusting connections.
So I think it's twofold. Number one, my social game is really pretty terrible. I'm not good at connecting with people in the limited time that we had on Sequester. Maybe in a game like Big Brother, when it's a little more slow, maybe then I would have better odds at connecting with somebody. But in the structure of the game and how it's run, you basically get like day zero to meet everybody. That's where we're all introduced to everybody. No one goes home that night. We get a little details about how the week is going to go. And the next morning we wake up and start the game, you know, during the afternoon. And after the game starts, you really don't have any more, you know, time back at the house to kiki with the boys and girls. Like, you really don't. You're either in the game, playing the game, or you're in your room thinking about the game that you just played. One of the two things is happening, or you're having confessionals done. One of those three things. That's all you're doing in Sequester. And I think I knew that, but I wasn't prepared for that. Like, the first night, we can talk about the first elimination, but the first night after I barely survived getting pulled into a battle match, I was consumed with thinking about Katie and what she was going to do to me in the game. Because what you didn't see was so remember, this is the first elimination. I don't know the way things work yet. I didn't know that we were going to be secluded from each other. I thought we were just going to go back to the house and hash it out, and I was going to have a chance to talk to her. Well, we're not. She actually went ahead of me with her handler into the dining room of the house. And I walked into the house and I saw her sitting on her right, and no one was with her. And I started to have a conversation with her, and she was like, no, absolutely not. Like, and I was like, ooh, she's really mad at me, which I think she was mad at me. But in reality, she was trying to make sure that we didn't have a conversation, not on camera. She wanted to make sure that the gold was on camera when there was someone there to film us. And obviously that didn't take place until the next day. So that whole night I was thinking about Katie, and I was thinking she was really pissed at me. And obviously coming into the game, because I didn't know who was going to be there. So I had a plan to deal with anybody who was my arch enemy who was there, like you. I'm just kidding. Anybody, there are people that don't care for me, Taryn. You know who those people are.
Too many, Brent.
Too many to count.
Yeah.
I know, right? If I ran into one of those people, then I was going to go at them pretty hardcore and be like, look, if you try to go for me, I'm pulling you in. Just want you to know. And then when this happened with Katie, I was like, I'm gonna pull the trigger on this and play the game the way I want to play it. Now, was that the best choice in hindsight? Probably not. I think a softer tack with Katie might have worked better, but I didn't know that at the time. And I thought she was really mad. And the game moved so fast that you have to work fast. Like, I mean, remember I know I'm a little all over the place right now, but like the rounds with Katie where I proposed that quote unquote deal, which was really blackmail to her, was right after the round started. And we're talking and I'm like, I think there's a chance she's the killer. If she is the killer, I'm on the list and I need to make sure she switches me off the list by the time the first two kills are revealed. So I wanted to get that deal out and on the table right away so that she knew the consequences of coming for me in this particular round. And obviously I had the killer wrong, but I wasn't wrong about the fact that I was on somebody's list.
Yeah. That, I mean, I think that sort of brings us to what my overall, I think, analysis of your gameplay was, which was a lot of like good ideas to like the correct sort of like strategic move. But the execution being a bit off here, right? And there. Were you recognizing that in the moment? Like what was going through your head when you make a move like, say, talking about how you're here to boost the ratings and you're the star of the show?
Did I stutter? Oh,
what's going through your mind? Like, do you really just not even see what that sounds like to other people?
See, you're right. The one thing you said on the podcast was Brent made an argument that Brent would accept.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's the tea. I think I was a little narcissistic, a lot narcissistic. It's okay. I can own it. I'm narcissistic at times. I made an argument that I would take hook, line, and sinker. If Janelle came up to me and was like, you know, Brent, you need to keep me on the show because the fans will fucking love it. I'd be like, oh my God, I'm totally keeping you on the show because the fans will love it and they'll love me. That's awesome. But these people, no, they didn't like that argument at all. I knew that my argument had fell flat with Rachel because in the moment it sort of, she got stepped on, her line got stepped on because Shireen came into the conversation right then. But her line was so funny because it was like, well, what do I get out of that? And I'm like, nothing really. Just my good grace. I don't know. What do you want? No, I was not aware that most of my plans or the things that I said that I executed were failing. I had a good time with them. Like, I didn't care if they failed as long as they somewhat succeeded in the time. And as long as I did it with gusto and I played the game my way, I really didn't give a fuck, Taryn. Like, I mean, here's the thing. As bad as I played, as bad as my social game was, and as many mistakes as I made in the game, I still wasn't in a spot where more than half the people in the game wanted me to leave the game. I can count five people who were in the game at the time that I left it who did not want me to go anywhere. They wanted me to stay. But my social capital was not great enough to save me from the anchor that I was tied to in Spencer. And that's why I got voted out 7-2.
Yeah, I mean, if from my perspective, it seemed like you were pretty consistently just sort of like the most expendable person aside from Spencer, basically. Mm-hmm. And Spencer winning those battle matches was really helping you out for a while, mm-hmm. until you got anchored to him. I would definitely have worried for you if Spencer lost any of those battle matches, though.
But so, see, that's the thing, though. I recognize that I was not at the top, but I never felt like I was at the bottom. I feel like that's a testament to two things. Number one, my ambivalence that I can't see it in front of me, but also too, like, I would give credit to the players in the game. Like, you know, Josh, for instance, always made me feel like I was somebody who he cared about and wanted to keep in the game. In reality, he could give a shit about me. Like, Josh wants to win the money. Like, Billy, somebody who I felt like was on my side most of the time, you know, secretly has loyalties to other people. Marcelo and Jacob, I was not aware of their relationship. I'm a sequester nerd, and I was not aware that Jacob and Marcelo had a previous relationship coming into the game. Certainly not one that indicated they were as close as they are, as you see right now. Like, that's amazing to me that I was oblivious to that. But they all did such a good job of making me feel like I was part of their plans. That's the thing about this season, is that even the people that are out already, all of them, I had fun with Rachel, but like, she played her ass off. Everybody in the game was hungry to win the game. They were really hungry to win the money. And that remains true after I'm out of the game. There are eight people left in the game. They all see the threats. They see what they need to do. It's a question of whether or not they're going to be able to get it done. Can they get the votes together? Can they execute it? And can they get the votes at the end if they make it to the end? Like, it's, but there are eight people there that all want to play hard and all want to win the game. There's nobody there who's like Christmas from Big Brother 19, who's like, I just want to make it to third place, or I'm okay being the runner up. Like, No, nobody wants that. They all want to win. So I'm excited about the ending of this season.
What was your plan moving forward? If you were, let's say you won this battle match, Spencer is out.
Yeah.
You're still in the game. Where do you go from there?
Well, I can't remember if they showed it. Did they show the conversation that I had with Muna last night? Do you remember a conversation with Muna where she explained to me? I don't think they showed it. I had a conversation
with Billy.
Yeah, I had a conversation with Muna where she explained to me, like, hey, I'm not against you here. I just know she was giving me a load of bull. Like, she was telling me, like, you know, the next round's going to be a puzzle. Like, how the fuck is she going to know it's going to be a puzzle? But she's like, the next round's going to be a puzzle. I'm pretty certain of that. I know you can beat Spencer. I need you in this game, Brent. Like, she was playing good. She was playing well. But if I had stayed in the game, if I'd come back, I do feel like I would have protected Muna and Jacob. I was hot with them as the round happened, but if I came back in, I needed people who were threats and I needed to take some heat off of me. Jacob was somebody who was perfect. He's a two-time winner. He's a legend in the sequester community. Muna as well, somebody who's an absolute legend. I would have stayed on their side of things, because obviously Spencer would be out of the game by this point and I would literally have no allies. I actually had pretty good relationships with Natalie as well. Natalie's somebody who I think a lot of the fans underestimate at their own peril. She is a vibrant player and an absolute mighty game right now. Both Josh and Natalie are people that really made me feel like they listened to me and they enjoyed my company and I was somebody that they wanted to keep in the game. So those five people I probably would have tried to work with moving forward.
Talk me through a little bit of this round. I feel like there's not a lot to talk about, to be honest, because basically over the second the twist was announced and Muna.
Yeah, we're right. I was gonna say that the twist, so I've heard some people say that the twist was over when Muna announced the pairs. I'm like, honey, the twist was over when they announced the twist. Like, that's the tea. I knew the minute that twist came up that she was going to put me with Spencer. I thought there was a 1% chance she puts Spencer with Brendan if she really, really, really wants Spencer to go home. But I knew that she was close to Rachel and Shireen, and I knew that I had torn Shireen a new asshole right as she went into jury and that she had just spent the night with her. Like, Shireen got into jury that night and then they had the battle back the next morning. So they had that whole night to sit there and bag on me with Katie, who was also not a big fan of me, and Jay West, who was also not a big fan of me. So they are all in the I hate Brent club. And of course, Muna wants Spencer's head on a stick. So it's like, this twist presents itself and, you know, this is great. I can make both people happy. I can make myself happy by sticking Spencer with the jury's hated prospect and Brent. And one of us is going to get our way. And the jury got their way on this one.
Yeah. Is there any amount of irony that you feel that you got by a battle back, by a buyback and like a really bad twist situation when in the past, You've been okay with those things?
Oh, totally. I mean, like all the irony in the world, like totally fine with it. Like, the show has to experiment. I mean, I would point out that this is the first round ever in sequester history where there was no drag. And that is what makes sequester to me. That's the essence of sequester. I'm good at playing sequester. I'm not good at playing survivor. And it felt like we were playing survivor in this round because without the fear of putting the fear of God into somebody with the threat of a drag or who they might drag or who they might expose, there was nothing for me to do. Like, we weren't playing sequester anymore. We were just playing a social strategy game and the people on the bottom were going to go home. And that was me and Spencer. So I was a little bummed about that. I would say, just to be totally upfront, I've seen some people on social media. I saw some people in the chat last night think that the twist itself was overpowered. I don't think the twist was overpowered at all. I thought it was a powerful twist. Muna is an absolutely bomb ass player and played it perfectly. It's not Muna's fault that she got all the power that she did. I thought the amount of power that she got was appropriate for somebody returning to the game. I just think that having the non-drag round in the same round where she had all that power probably made the round a little boring. And in the end, I was correct because it was obvious that me and Spencer were going to get voted off. But
I would say the non-drag part of it is why it's overpowered.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm trying to get at. Yeah, the powers that Muna got from Sequester for re-entering the game, the LOS and the safety and getting to vote and all that, and even to make the pairs, all of that I was totally cool with. And I was like, okay, I can work with that. But then I heard the part about, oh, you don't even get to drag anybody. You're going to have to battle each other. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, that was the nail.
So I think all of this sort of culminates in your speech here, your final speech that mm-hmm. everyone needs to give a speech when they get voted out.
Yes, I was laughing so hard 2 weeks ago when you were like, I don't know what it is about people. They get voted off and they feel the need to give a speech of some kind. And I'm like, oh, wait for it, Terry. Wait for it.
A speech about your journey. Has been a supporting they were extras in the story. Yes. Mm-hmm. But you've come to appreciate their roles in your journey.
Look, here's the thing. I just want you to know this, okay? I ask that you believe me on this. I meant every word of that speech, okay? I meant it as sincere as I'm standing in front of you right now, okay?
I believe you.
Like I was like, I want to go up there and I want to give the show a nice way to send me off. Like, because I was like, okay, I'm going to go into a battle match with Spencer. I don't think they've had a physical competition yet. There's a good chance. I mean, I'm built similarly to him. I'm 6'1". He's like 6'4". And I felt like there was a chance that it could pop up, and it did. So I was like, you know, I have to beat him, and I'm probably an underdog in whatever physical competition they put out there. But I wanted to give the show a way to tie up in a nice, I like tidy endings, Taryn. I don't like leaving things messy. So I wanted to, you know, just tell people why I was there, which, you know, was true, to give a little hype to Sequester. And hopefully people who hadn't checked out the show before would check it out, either because they love me or they hate me. I think, again, the problem came out in the execution. It was maybe a good idea to say something like this, but I didn't execute it the right way. I think it had a little too much me in it and not enough them in it. And that's probably where I failed. But, you know, that's okay. My heart was in the right place, and the show had some fun at my expense, and I was totally fine with that.
Yeah. It was definitely, I think it was definitely peak Brent.
And yeah, it was an extension of the ratings comment from episode 3. And I think people, like, it's sort of like, I can't remember who was on a podcast who was comparing me to somebody. I can't remember who they compared me to, but they're just like, Brent does it so much, and he plays so bad at times that you aren't offended by it anymore. It's just like, oh, that's just Brent. That's just Brent being Brent. You know, like, I mean, like, you know, we get Brent. It's sort of like how I am with Spencer. Like, Spencer is a douche, but he's our douche, and I get him, you know? I feel like people were just like, you know what? I anybody else I would probably be really offended by, and maybe they were. I think a few people definitely were annoyed at my speech, but I know a lot of people really liked it. And in the moment it felt true. After the fact, watching Jacob and Brendan's confessionals, obviously I was like, oh wow, so they really weren't living for it. I will say really quickly, I love Brendan, but he was absolutely impossible this round. Like, he was so indignant that his name got said by Spencer in one fleeting second when Spencer was panicking. I know Spencer's a terrible player at times socially. Brendan should also recognize that Spencer is a terrible player at times socially, and he should try to work with him in the game. I feel like that's his mistake in this round, was not trying to support us. I literally spent 10 minutes of the round trying to tell Brendan that he should work with us and try to get out some other people, but he was having none of it. And the minute Spencer said his name, he was like, oh, you said my name. Like, just like, dude, like, I wasn't gasping that people said my name. Like, grow the fuck up. And I was like a little over his I don't know, self-indulgence of like being aghast at the fact that his name was said during that round. Like, you said your name was said, so what? There's only four choices, and we're not gonna say our name. So we have to say one of the other three. Like he took it as a personal attack, and it just wasn't that. And I like, come on, you know, Spencer doesn't give a fuck who goes home here. He just doesn't want it to be him. I feel like Brendan should know that. And obviously he didn't.
Yeah. So in the battle match, I know some people were wondering, was it really as seemingly close as it, yes, as it was there towards, yeah, the end?
Yeah, there was no editing movie magic with Audrey on that one. I was really proud of myself on this one. I almost won that. I really did. I was definitely to the third plank before Spencer. I had a lead. I had a lead from the start. Spencer's just an absolute beast. He caught up so fast. Like once he literally had trouble with the rope. That wasn't any movie magic either. He literally had trouble with the rope. I saw that he was like tangled up in the rope, and I was already on the second plank. And I was like, I might have a chance. And the minute he got that rope untied, he was literally like Wonder Woman with the lasso and just, and you know, he'd like flip it over with his wrist and drag it back and walk across. And then you saw there at the end, I am neck and neck with him, but I fell off the beam. So I had to run back to the beginning. And then in doing so, I was so mad that I fell off the beam. I left the rope out of reach. So then when I came back, I had to step off the beam again to get the rope. So that lost all that time. And by then he was on his way to finishing. So yeah, I almost won that. And it was, you know what? Here's the thing. I wouldn't change it for the world. It was an epic challenge. It was so pretty. It was designed so well. The colors were vibrant. It looked great on camera. Everything about it really worked for me. And it was an actual physical skill set challenge that you had to do. I'll take that any day over digging through kitty litter.
Oh, was that the, that was kitty litter?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what it looked like to me.
All right. Okay. You've played this now. You played some minis before. You know, mm-hmm, you played the live version. Maybe you've learned a couple things about yourself. If you were to play again, would you have, do you feel like you could do better? Do you feel like you could improve upon this performance?
I do think I could improve better. I think I can improve, and I think I could. It depends on who's there. Like I would assume if I came back, it would be some sort of all-star situation, and I would probably be familiar and have an actual friendship. But that's just the thing. Other people had friends coming into this. Okay. I had people that I talked to on Twitter and said, I liked your mini. Like, mm-hmm, I had never really had more than two sentences said to Muna or Jacob or Marcelo. I don't think I'd ever talked to Brendan or Natalie or Josh or Rachel or anybody. The only person that I had any semblance of a relationship with was Spencer, because he was in the same Skype chat I was in for the past like year. And I'd had a couple of personal conversations with him about girls, and he had this girl he was dating for a while. And I'm like, you know, a gay soothsayer. Like you can, you know, ask my advice on anything, and I'll give you advice on love or life or whatever. And I feel like I got to know him, but I had no idea he was going to be there in Sequester. Like they did a great job of keeping the cast secret from all of us. There was no pre-gaming whatsoever. I had no idea who was going to be there. And obviously I kept the fact that I was going to be in the game a massive secret. I was really happy that we kept that secret, by the way. Taryn obviously knew I was going to be playing, but nobody else did besides Rob at the last minute. So I was really psyched that when I showed up, people were like, wow, I never expected that you would be here. But I did look around and I was like, I don't have anybody here who I really think I can, like, I don't think I have anybody here who will really go to bat for me. Even Spencer, I felt like he would sell me out if he needed to save himself. There was nobody that, like, I'm not going to use any names because I might play with them, but there's people that I think I would have their back in this game. Like if I played with you, I would have your back in the game. Now you may not have mine, but I would have your back. And I would want to, you know, people that I actually have true friendships with outside the game, those are the people that I would try to protect. And I would, I don't want to say I'd be willing to fall on my sword, but I would willingly vote somebody out. And if they pick me for a battle, they pick me for a battle. Like that's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. And you know, through the first part of the game, at least the first round, I was so scared about my vote, but I do think I was appropriately scared for my vote with Josh. The second round with Natalie, I didn't want Spencer to go anywhere, so I ended up being the vote to send Natalie out there, but I did a good job of making sure that she was not aware that I was the vote to send her home. Like, I lied to her the entire time. She didn't know until she watched the episode. So, like, that, and then what else? the round three, like I felt like Spencer made mistakes, and I also did a good job of keeping the target off of me and saying why you should vote out Spencer. Round four, I got a good draw. Like, let's be real. That draw was fantastic. Me and Shireen tethered together. Me and Billy tethered together. Sounds good to me. If I had drawn Spencer or Spencer had drawn me, I was up Schitt's Creek. You know, even somebody like, actually, I don't want to say, but like there are other people in the game. I feel like if I had been tethered to, they might be more expendable in the eyes of the people. And you know, just to talk about that point again, like that's the thing, like Shireen and Billy and Rachel were controlling the votes. They were working together. There were three people there that were all working together. Now they may not have voted together in the end, but they were working together. They were trying to get the same goal accomplished. You see, even in the episode, Shireen's like, you know, we all voting for Jacob, and she knows that Jacob's tethered to Spencer. And she, you know, she, true, in the end, she didn't vote for him, but that's what she was trying to get to have happen. So she's trying to preach loyalty to Spencer, and yet she's in the laundry room not 10 minutes before telling everybody, hey, we're voting for Jacob, right? And she knows Jacob is tethered to Spencer. So again, there's no loyalty there, Shireen. I love Shireen, but I just think sometimes, like myself, I feel like that she believes a little bit of her own BS, and that's BS. She was going to go after Spencer. Spencer had to pull her into a battle match.
Okay, but social game wise, do you feel like what are the improvements you could make there?
I don't know about that one. I mean, I'm like Popeye, Taryn. I am who I am. You know, like I don't. That's such a dated reference for you. I'm sorry. I just don't think I can be anything other than myself. But you know what? I played balls to the wall, like myself this time, and still more than half the cast didn't want me to go anywhere. So I feel like it was okay. Like I here's the thing. I could play differently and I could play a more muted version of myself, but would I be fulfilled by that? Would I be happy about that? Would I be personally gratified by that if I got anywhere in the game? I don't really think so. I had the time of my life this time playing the way that I said the game should be played. And I just don't think I would trade that even for a win at the end. I'd rather play the way I want to play. And if I win, great. I don't want to try to adapt my personhood to the intricacies of strategy in Sequester. That's just not for me.
Isn't there a way to be you just without making people pissed off?
So I will own the fact that I should not have opened my mouth to Billy when I did, but I do think that the train had already left the station by then. We just got more mad at each other because people forget previous in the round, she was there trying to push me under the bus. When I was trying to avoid getting pulled into a battle match, Shireen's coming for me. Billy joined in and said, he voted for Katie, dude, you can't trust him. Like, do we forget that part? So I was already pissed off at Billy. And then when she started kissing their ass, which is exactly what she was doing, I said, can you stop kissing their ass, Billy? And we were off to the races. I didn't mean for that to happen. I love Billy. She's a diamond. I love her. But like that fight was everything to me. I didn't mean for that to happen. But then once it happened and we were going at it, I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm fighting with Billy right now. And she's like, the thing about Billy is she's so capable of giving it right back to me. But then you saw the next day, she's totally fine. Like, she's like me. She blows and then she's totally fine. Like, Billy's fucking awesome. I can't say enough good things about her and everybody in the cast.
All right. Anything else, Brent, that I know you've got a lot to say. So
I'm sorry. Yes. I think there was a question that I wanted to tackle, but so Christina, our old friend Cena Nitz on Twitter said, did you have any time where you could have tried to convince Muna to tether Spencer to Brendan? Something you will know if you ever play Sequester is the people in the live game, they all ask a million questions. So when this twist was announced, we came back to the house and we're all asking, okay, what's this? What's this? What's this? We're all getting all of our questions answered. Of course, one of the questions was, can we talk to Muna? In fact, I think it was even Muna that asked the question, who said, can I talk to people before I make the pairs? No. Sequesterbot said no, that she had to make the pairs sight unseen and without talking to us. And I knew once that happened, I would have loved to have a chance to talk to Muna and see if I could change her mind. But I don't think I could have changed her mind, but I had no time to talk to Muna in that instance. Let's see. Is there something else? We talked a little bit about this, but Watch and Tell on Twitter says, why didn't you play to win, Brent? You could have done it. Bitch, I did play to win. What are you talking about? I played to win. This was me. There was no part of me that was fake. I went out there and played the way I wanted to. Sometimes it is physically impossible as it has, like, look at this interview. It is physically impossible for me to keep my mouth shut sometimes. When you get me going on a subject, I got shit to say. That's why I make a pretty good podcaster. But it also is why I make a subpar social game player when it comes to Sequester. I'm just not very good. I like to hear myself talk. I don't like to listen to other people talk sometimes. Hey, I can own that. That's okay.
I think that's the Brent strategy is that if I own it, they can't blame me too much, right?
Hey, that's what I did with my speech on Twitter. I went out, like, I knew that speech was going to land with a thud with a lot of the fan base. So I put a tweet out there, was like, you know, look at me coming out to give my speech. And I put a little clown underneath it coming out of a curtain. And, you know, people ate it up. Like, you have to be able to own your shit and laugh at yourself. If you can do that, people will usually forgive you for anything. That's the tale I live by. Andrew Kirk on Twitter says, who from RHAP would you endorse for Sequester Season 5? Well, besides present company, obviously, I think Melissa would be fantastic on Sequester. I don't know if she would do it, but she would be fantastic.
on the podcast, she was like, I could never do this. This is way too confusing.
That's great. Let's sign her up. I also think, Puya would be fantastic. Liana as well, would my old Drag Race cohort, would be fantastic on the show. She would absolutely rock. I think possibly Puya and Liana, stunt casting there, wouldn't be so bad. Also Aman. Aman congratulated me on
my
Twitter.
Guy.
Yeah, and I think he would be phenomenal. In fact, I really thought there was a chance I could see Aman there. I really did. I thought there was a chance I could see somebody from RHAP there, and if there was somebody from RHAP, I would have fallen on the sword for him. I really would have. Like, I would have gone to bat for them. But there was no such person there. I was on my own. So I had to scrape and fight. I played the way I wanted to play because I literally felt like, I told this to people when I came out of the game, and I'll say it again. I felt like from the moment Josh threatened me with dragging me into a battle match, I felt like from that point on, I was driving 80 miles an hour down an icy road and someone just cut my brakes the entire fucking time. It was thrilling. It was everything I wanted it to be. For any of you out there who are thinking about auditioning for Sequester Season 5 or beyond, I totally encourage you to do it. It was like, if you ever dream about playing like Big Brother or Survivor, like that's like a 1 in a million shot. But if you're really good, you can make this happen. You can get on Sequester and show your stuff and go out there and live your dream. And that's what I got to do. It was like I know that Audrey says it's an amateur production. It didn't feel like that in the moment to me. Like they do a really good job of taking care of us and making sure all of our mics are working. And they when they yell, you know, action and cuts, and when the camera's on, when the cameras are off, and the place and the team is just so professional there. I never felt like it was an amateur production. They felt so professional at the time. They were so giving. They would always check in on us, and the integrity of the game too. I was talking with a Big Brother player who I won't mention, who, you know, I think was thinking about possibly auditioning for Sequester, and I said that I was so impressed by the integrity of the game because they take it so seriously. Like when you're not supposed to be talking, you don't talk. They keep you apart. They put people physically there with you to make sure you're not talking, or they move you into different rooms. Like that made me so happy because I care about the show. I care about the fairness of everything. I want the game to be just honest. I want people to see the integrity of the show, and I feel like that shines on the screen. I really do. I'm so gratified with this season.
All right. Well, it's been interesting. It's been interesting.
Yes.
Watching, you know, I feel like somebody asked me this last night. They were like, were you surprised by Brent at all. And
not one bit.
It's pretty much exactly what I expected, to be honest.
Yeah, right. I know. I mean, I wish I was a chameleon. I wish I could change my spots. Oh, that's not a chameleon. That's a leopard, right? You can't change your spots if you're a leopard. Whatever. I'm not an animal who can change his look. Okay. I'm just me. I can't be anything other than me. So that's what you got on the screen. That's okay.
There it is. All right. Yeah. Well, thank you guys for joining us. Thank you, Brent, for hanging out with us here.
Thank you, Kitty.
I'm sure we'll talk more about the season after it ends.
So we still got a winner crown. So who's that going to be?
Yeah. You know? Weirdly, the show is still on. I don't know.
Right. How did that happen?
Yeah.
The ratings are going to RIP the ratings. Sorry. It's like,
what are they gonna do?
I don't know what they're going to do from here without me, but they'll muddle on.
All right. That's what we have for you. You can, of course, find me on Twitter at Armstrong Taren or twitch.tv/Taren Armstrong. That's where you can watch me watch Brent make cringy speeches. And see what kind of face I make. You can also find Brent on Twitter at One Lucky Gay if you want to, see a man make fun of himself via clown gifs and scream into the void.
Yeah, exactly. That's usually what I do.
All right. Thanks again, guys. And
thanks, guys.
See you next time.
Sequester, of all the podcasts, this one here.